Welcome to Teaching Tuesday here at English Corner. Today we're going to talk about a certain type of grammar. Today and next week we'll both be grammar related, but mainly looking at the different types of words that are used, such as, what's a noun, pronoun, that sort of stuff. Next week we'll be looking at phrases and clauses, what's the difference between them, how do they work, so on and so forth. So hopefully you come back next week for that second installment. But as I said, today we are going to be looking at the different parts of speech. Alright, so today we're looking at parts of speech. So to start out with, we're going to do pretty much very basic. The first one's going to be a noun. As most of you remember, a noun is a person, place, thing, or idea. There are two types of nouns. There's the proper nouns and the common nouns. Proper nouns are the actual names of people, places, such as Thomas Jefferson, Broadway. Common nouns are more of the generic names associated with things, such as street, dog, man. The next one is verbs. This one's going to be really long, because verbs are very, very intricate. If you remember from English class, verbs are the action words of your sentence, but action words are just one type of verb out there in the grammar world. There are actually 6 types of verbs. There are 2 ways that you can determine which type of verb a verb actually is. What word phrases follow it immediately to its right, unless it's an intransitive verb, which usually ends a sentence, and then the relationship to the words and phrases that the verb has in the sentence. Okay, so first type of verb we're going to look at is known as intransitive. As I said earlier, these types of verbs usually are found at the end of a sentence, usually a very short sentence. They are the ones that don't need to have a noun, adjective, anything else following it to determine what it means. So, for example, the mayor spoke is one example of intransitive verbs. The roach died. Garfield slept. So, as you can see, spoke, died, and slept end those 3 sentences. And they are all intransitive because, as I said, they end it in the sentence. They don't have any words following it, but the sentence is considered complete because we don't need any other information to follow. Like with all things related to English, there is an exception to this quote-unquote rule. If you caught on, I said earlier that an intransitive verb doesn't need anything to follow it to make sense. But there are times when an adverb or an adverbial phrase follows the intransitive verb. When this happens, it's usually answer the questions of how, where, why, when, and how often. For example, if we had the sentence, the baby panda cried, or the Titanic sank. In both examples, we have cried and sank, but if we want to be very specific as to how the panda cried or when the Titanic sank, we could add more information to it. So we could say the baby panda cried softly or the Titanic sank in 1912. So, intransitive verbs, there are those that just can't stand alone the end of a sentence, and they must have an adverb or adverbial phrase that follows them. So let's say that we have a sentence that says Cadillac's seating system acts. That sentence can't stand alone by itself without a phrase behind it to help it make sense. So to help us remedy that, we have to add the phrase like a shock absorber to the end of it to help it make sense and not leave the readers and sometimes the writers, when they go back to read it, sitting there scratching their heads like, what was I trying to mean by that? So if we add like a shock absorber to the end of our Cadillac sentence, It will read, Cadillac's seating systems acts like a shock absorber. So see, that makes a little more sense. Acts is still that intransitive verb, but we have the adverbial clause, like a shock absorber, that follows it to help us make sense of what that's the Cadillac system is. All right, second group is known as linking verbs. You might have heard about these. So these verbs, on the other hand, whereas intransitive verbs mostly can end a sentence, linking verbs, they cannot ever end a sentence. They cannot be followed by adverbs. So that's something that intransitive is very specific about needing to have. Linking verbs are very specific about not having. So for linking verbs, you have to they must be followed by a noun, an adjective, or the other. So nouns and adjectives may be either a single word or a multiple word phrase. So this group of verbs is very small, no more than just a few dozen, which include but are not limited to seem, remain, appear, become, and the verbs that deal with the senses. So feeling, tasting, smelling, sound, taste. Sometimes turned and stayed can be linking verbs when they're followed by adjectives, such as, the meeting stayed productive, or the cheese turned rancid. Look and tasted are those linking verbs because they're followed by the adjectives productive and rancid. Now, adjectives are nouns that follow linking verbs are closely associated with their subject noun phrase. We'll talk about, a little bit about that later in next week's podcast. So if you still aren't sure about that, write down a little note, listen to it. This might make a little sense then. All right, an adjective that follows a linking verb generally summarizes some characteristics about the subject noun. So in brief, linking verbs are followed by nouns or adjectives. The nouns function as predicate nouns, and the adjectives function as predicate adjectives. We will talk about predicates later. So if you aren't quite sure what a predicate is, continue listening. I will talk about what it actually means to be a predicate. All right. Verb type number 3 is called transitive verbs. Now, transitive verbs are very much like intransitive verbs in that they make up a huge set of verbs that are that number in the thousands. But that's pretty much all that they have in common. Transitive verbs must be followed immediately by sentences that are known as noun phrases. And like I said earlier in today's episode, we'll talk about phrases next week and about what does a noun phrase look like. So just bear in mind that you don't really need to focus on that just yet. Just know that noun phrases are what follows a transitive verb. But unlike the noun phrases that may follow linking verbs, the nouns that follow transitives do not rename their subjects. They are usually not related to the verb at all. The noun phrases function as direct objects. So often the object of a transitive verb has something that is done to it by the subject. We'll talk about the subject a little bit later in today's episode, so don't feel like you have no idea what that means. So here are some examples these examples are, the letter is typed by the secretary, the milk bone is crushed by Jamal's Doberman, and the Medicare bill is supported by President Johnson. So typed, crunched, and support are your linking verbs because they link the secretary to the letter, the Doberman to the milk bone, and President Johnson to the Medicare bill. So there's a little fact that helps you identify transitive verbs. Sentences with these types of verbs can usually be turned around into a passive sentence. So, from above, if we switch them, so instead of saying the secretary typed the letter, we can say the letter was typed by the secretary. Instead of saying Jamal's Doberman crunched the milk bone, we can say the milk bone was crunched by Jamal's Doberman. And then for the last example, instead of saying President Johnson supported the Medicare bill, we could say the Medicare bill was supported by President Johnson. Have you noticed a little something about how that was phrased? We took what was at after the verb, put it in the front, took what was in front of the verb, put it behind, and added two words right next to, on either side of the verb. Was, verb, by. That's what helps make it passive. That's what helps us identify, hey, that's a linking verb because it's still linking those two things, regardless of whether it's an active or passive voice. Now, passive sentence, as I just hinted at, invert normal subjects and object phrases. So here's some more examples. So coyotes killed the sheep, or the sheep were killed by coyotes. Here's another example. Satellites monitor the Saudi pipeline. The Saudi pipeline is monitored by satellites. Here's another example. Snoops.com dispels urban legends. Flip that around and it becomes urban legends are dispelled by Snoops.com. So, as I kind of hinted at, if a sentence can be made passive, you can be sure the verb is transitive. Alright, so remember, transitive verbs are followed by noun phrases that function as direct objects. Sentences that have transitive verbs can almost always be inverted to form a passive sentence. Alright, now there are two place transitive verbs. Now they can be called two place transitive verbs. These kind of make up the last two types of verbs that we'll see. So just hang on with me as we discuss them. Alright, so that first two place transitive, that's a subcategory of our transitive, is called a VG verb. Now it sounds just like it's spelled. The letter V, the letter G, and then the word verb. So VG verbs, they act like they're giving something to the in the following sentence. So in this following sentence, the school board gave the teachers a raise, or like buy, and Clark Gable bought Carol Lombard a ranch. So when VG verbs are followed immediately by two noun phrases, like in the previous examples, the first noun phrase functions as the indirect object and the second as the direct object. Because as we'll talk about later, indirect objects are what is receiving the direct object. So remember, this is still a type of transitive verb. So we're still going to have our subject at the beginning of the verb, giving, buying, dispelling, killing, doing something. That's what the action verb is. It's doing something to what comes after it. So in the example, the school board gave the teachers a raise. The school board, they're the ones doing the action. And then we have the verb that's doing the action, gave something, a raise, to something else, the teachers. That's what a direct and indirect object, that's the difference. So that's how we know, one way how we know that gave is a VG verb, because it has both an indirect and direct object. Now, if it just there was just the direct object after it, we could say that the verb is transitive. But since we have both indirect and direct, we have to be a little more specific and say, oh, it's a VG verb. So, indirect objects have one more important characteristics, with, you know, a few expectations, they can perceive as well as receive. So, in other words, indirect objects are always, almost always, animate, usually some sort of human factor. VG verbs create a business scenario, giving and receiving, all right? So, keep that in mind. It might not be it might still be transitive, but you have to have, you know, something giving, something receiving in order for it to be narrowed down to being a VG verb. So, just like transitive verbs, VG verbs can have that alternate form. You can rearrange the noun phrases in a sentence in a VG verb, placing the indirect object in a prepositional phrase introduced by, you know, 2 and 4. So, in our teacher's example, so the school board gave the teachers a raise. We can kind of switch it around the indirect and direct objects. Say the school board gave a raise to the teachers. See, we used 2 there to make our indirect object also a prepositional phrase. So in our Clark Gable example, so it originally is Clark Gable bought Carol Lombard a ranch. If we switch it around, the direct object and indirect object, we get Clark Gable bought a ranch for Carol Lombard. So we still have our indirect object Carol Lombard because she's still receiving the ranch, and we add the preposition for to make it a prepositional phrase as well as an indirect object. I know it's very confusing, but it will make sense the more you have access to it and the more exposure you have. But if you notice, the nouns in the prepositional phrase still remain the receivers of the direct object nouns. Even as a prepositional phrase, they still remain those indirect objects. So keep in mind, VG verbs have both direct and indirect objects, whether those indirect objects come right after the verb and then it's the direct object, or we switch it around and have the direct object right after the verb and the indirect object after the direct verb acting also as a prepositional phrase. Usually it's going to be 2 and 4. Alright, so the next type of, there's one more thing I want to say. So remember we have those 2 different types of ways of doing VG verbs and identifying it. Both ways are valid. Don't let it confuse you. Just keep in mind that we can have indirect objects and direct objects after the verb in order to be able to identify that, yes, it is a VG verb, but they have to be after it, not before. Hopefully that makes sense. If it doesn't, let me know. I will try to clarify everything. Okay, the 6th type of verb, or the 5th type, yes, not the 6th, it's the 5th, is a VC verb. So just like VG's verbs are spelled VG and then the verb, VC verbs are same way. A V, then a C, both together, and then the word verb. Now, a VC verb is followed by a direct noun phrase, then by either a noun phrase, an adjective phrase, or an infinitive phrase. And these phrases function as the object complement because they're complementing the object, which is our direct object. So, consider is a type of VC verb. So, first example, Republicans consider Democrats big spenders. Or, some rock fans consider Bob Dylan old-fashioned. Another example is Thomas Jefferson considered the Missouri Compromise to be the death of the nation. Alright, so in our first example, consider is followed by Democrats. With that, then a noun phrase functioning as a direct object, which is followed by big spenders, which is a noun phrase that is complimenting the object, which is Democrats. In our second example, Bob Dylan is our direct object, and the adjective old-fashioned is complimenting Bob Dylan. In our third one, the noun phrase Missouri Compromise is our direct object, because that's what's being considered. Then the infinitive phrase, to be the death of the nation, is complementing what the Missouri Compromise is being considered as. So the term complement in grammar refers to a consonant that completes a phrase or clause. So in the example above, Republicans don't just consider Democrats, they consider them as being big spenders. Similarly, rock fans don't just consider Bob Dylan, they consider him to be old-fashioned. Nor did Jefferson consider the Missouri Compromise, he considered it to be the death of the nation. So these noun, adjective, and infinitive phrases and sentences with VC verbs function as object complements because they complete the idea of the verb and follow, keyword, a direct object. So the second point, to help you be able to identify complements to VC verbs, is that object complements have some of the characteristics as the predicate nouns and predicate adjectives they follow, that follow the linking verbs. So nouns that function as an object complement refer to the same person or thing as their objects, just as predicate nouns refer to the same person or thing as the subjects in the sentence with a linking verb. So in our examples from above, you know, big spenders renames Democrats. Adjectives that are object complements give characteristics to their direct objects. So if some rock fans are correct, Bob Dylan is old-fashioned. If that, of course, doesn't make sense, let me know. I will try to answer your questions and clear anything up. All right, so here's some more examples that I hope will help clear things up. I'm going to give you three more VC verbs and examples of sentences. So think, found, and deem. So Mr. Wilson thinks Dennis a terror. Princess Diana found the royal crown to be a prison. And most historians deem Lincoln complex. So we have our subject, Mr. Wilson, Princess Diana, and most historians, those are our subjects of the sentence. They are the ones doing the action. Our VC verbs, as I said, are thinks, found, and deem. So Mr. Wilson thinks, Princess Diana found, and most historians deem. Then we have our direct objects, Dennis, the royal crown, and Lincoln. So, Mr. Wilson thinks Dennis, Princess Diana found the royal crown, and most historians deem Lincoln. And so they're doing something to those. So, how can we compliment them to help us identify exactly what those people think, found, and deem about our direct objects? So, in these examples, our compliments are a terror, to be a prison, and complex. So, Mr. Wilson thinks Dennis is a terror. Princess Diana found the royal crown to be a prison, the royal crown is a prison. And most historians deem Lincoln complex, that there's lots of things to him that just make our minds run wild. Now, some VC verbs act more like make, elect, or elect than considering or thinking. So in a sense, these verbs create their own object complements from their objects. So here's some more for those examples. Sport writers nicknamed Julius Irving Dr. J. The sexual revolution makes some people uncomfortable. Marx Brothers movies gets my dad to laugh. Now notice that these last three VC verbs have a sense of making their objects into something. So remember, we have our subject of those sentences, Sports Writers, Sexual Revolution, and Marx Brothers movies. Then we have our VC verbs, nicknamed, makes, and get. And then we have the objects, Julius Erving, some people, and my dad. So, VC verbs, nicknamed, makes, get, are making their objects, Julius Erving, some people, and my dad, something else. It's making Julius Erving into Dr. J, making some people uncomfortable, and making my dad laugh. Or to laugh, to make it that infinitive phrase. But VC verbs all have three-part predicates, a verb, an object, and a complement, whether or the complement is a result of the verb's action or is considered by it. Now, it's important to remember that two-place transitive verbs, both the VC and the VG, are both subheadings or subcategories of transitive verbs. They all three have direct objects, and you can make them in two sentences that are considered passive. All right? So transitive, VG, and VC all have similarities, but VC and VG take those similarities one step further. I know that's very confusing, very weird, but just, I have no way other than tell you to get over it. Just accept it, move on. It will become clear the more that you discuss it, the more that you work with it, the more time you have to think about it and actually practice it. Because as a teacher, the more practice you have, the easier it is to understand how it works, how you use it. All right, we've got one more type of verb to make it the final six. And that's the type of the verb called be. Now it's letter B, letter E, so be verbs. Now, lots of grammar books, especially those in, you know, middle school and high school, maybe even in upper elementary class grades, they will include be verbs and with linking verbs, because be verbs and linking verbs are very similar in many different ways. But for reasons that I'll get into later, it's more efficient to list be verbs as a separate type of verb. So for one thing, listing be as a separate category simplifies many of the statements that we make about verbs. If we put be and linking verbs into one category, we have to say that some of the linking verbs can be found followed by nouns and adjective phrases, and some can be followed by adverb phrases, adverbs of places as well. So by separating linking and be verbs, we simply say that linking verbs are followed by noun phrases and adjective phrases, whereas if we move be to the front of the sentence to make a question, are those children happy? You don't move seem to or another, you can't move seem or another linking verb. So the verb be is followed by either noun phrases, adjective phrases, or adverbs of place. Now, it's easy to recognize the verb be because there's only 8 forms of this word. And here are those 8 forms. Be, is, are, am, was, were, been, being. Those are the 8 types of be verbs. So it's really, really easy and somewhat simple to say, oh, look, that's a verb. And it's actually a be verb. But like linking verbs, be can also be followed by nouns or adjective phrases that function as predicate nouns or predicate adjectives. So Marilyn Monroe was insecure. Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho is the classic horror film. Now, unlike linking verbs, be may be followed immediately by an adverb of place, as in these following examples. My mother was in the next room. The post office is down the block. An adverb that follows be is sometimes called a predicate adverb. though we'll call it an adverb of place to be consistent with our adverb labeling practices that we'll get into later. Now, grammarians often classify adjectives, nouns, and adverbs that follow be as subject complements. Now, remember, the complements complete sentence constructions. Alright, so let's continue on. So we've gone through what nouns are, we've gone through what verbs are. So now I'm going to go over a few of two of the easiest things to identify. One is articles, the second is conjunctions. So articles are one of the easiest types of parts of speech to find in any sentence, like I said before. This small group of words are extremely necessary but are often overlooked. There are only three little words in this group: a, an, and the. All three of these words make this one of the easiest lessons or easiest things to identify and work on, because they're always going to be an article. Nothing's going to change about that. All right, so conjunctions are another one of the easiest parts of speech to find. This is another group of words that's small, usually overlooked, but extremely useful. So the most well-known ones are and, but, nor. Those are the most easiest conjunctions to find. There are some others that we'll talk about later, but for the most part, and, but, nor cover the conjunction area. All right, so the next thing I want to talk about is adverbs and adjectives, so keep listening for those. All right, the next two that we're looking at are adverbs and adjectives. Adjectives are words that generally limit, qualifies, or specifies certain characteristics or all characteristics of a noun or another adjective, like the small chair or the beige paint. Paint and chair being the nouns in those examples, and then small and beige being the adjectives because they're describing the chair and the paint. So we could change beige paint to pink paint or wet pink paint, all that sort of thing. Well, not wet, because that would be part of our next group, which are adverbs. So adverbs are words that can modify pretty much any other of the main word types. So adjectives can only modify adjectives and nouns. Adverbs can modify, of course, verbs and themselves, adverbs, but also adjectives themselves. So these words usually express a relation to a place, a time, circumstance, manner, cause, degree. So when I said wet pink paint, not exactly wet as an adjective, it would be more of an adverb because, you know, the manner of the paint, the degree of where it's dried, how it's dried. So the wet pink paint would be adverb, adjective, noun, where the adjective is modifying the paint, the color of the paint, and the color is describing the type of paint, if that makes sense. These are pretty easy, self-explanatory. Also, as always, if nothing is clear, let me know. There are other types of adverbs and adjectives that we'll talk about later. Or if you have questions about, hey, I want to know more, because you're like me and you like to get into the nitty-gritty stuff, let me know. I will do my best to make another episode or another part segment to add to this, or just bring it up to you and we can talk about that. So see you later. All right, here's another area, category of parts of speech called prepositions. Now these are what you can do with a frog and a log. So the frog is on the log, the frog is under the log, the frog is inside the log, the frog goes around, the frog jumps over, so on and so forth. There's a lot of others that go in with prepositions, but that is kind of the basic type and definition that you can use for prepositions. Let me double check to make my notes to make sure I'm not forgetting anything for you guys. So my official definition that I have here is: prepositions are a part of speech that precedes a noun phrase and makes a prepositional phrase with it. Prepositions are usually single words, such as in, up, for, or below, but they can also be multiple words, like in front of, thanks to, or apart from. So that is the quick, easy summation of it, the definition. If you have more questions, like I said, always ask. I'll do my best to answer them.